We are in Exodus 32 still, right? I'm just going to get started. Moses went up for 40 days. God gave him all this information on two tablets. Then all of a sudden, after 40 days, God stops him cold. I don't understand God's timing. I don't even understand all of God's logic. Hello, right? Like I should think that. But he waited until Israel had sin to inform Moses instead of sending him down before they did. They're getting ready to make a golden calf. No, they already have, right? They've done all this stuff. So he stops and says, go down and take care of your people. And he actually was going to destroy them, or he offered to destroy them. Jane and I have had discussions on this because I said, I honestly don't think God was going to destroy them, but he legitimately could have. Okay, and that was his part of his point. I think it was kind of an Abraham moment where Abraham didn't know if he was going to let Isaac live or die. It doesn't say that, but I believe that God knew what, you know, the Moses' response would be and all that. And God relented, and that bothers Jane some. To me, it doesn't. I honestly don't try anymore to put all the pieces of the divine puzzle together. So I don't think that's a cop-out. I just don't think that God tells us everything. This is true and this is true, but it's like trying to put two magnets together that are the same, you know, north. They just don't go together in your mind. And God never says you have to. So I'm not trying to be too simple, and I'm not trying to avoid preaching the whole counsel of God. I just teach what's there and ignore what isn't there. Okay, God doesn't build the bridge to ideas together all the time. He just doesn't do that. It's kind of like the Trinity. I don't understand it, but this is true, this is true, this is true, and therefore there's a Trinity, this is true, but we can't understand it. That's okay to not understand it all, okay? All right. So Moses gets sent down after God relents from the harm which he said he would do to his people, okay? So now, number one, this is where we want to go. Moses heads down the mountain. I know that's a big, profound principle or point, but here it is. Moses heads down the mountain. After God told him to do that in verse 7, now he actually heads down after he appeals to God to deliver them, not destroy them. And we think I honestly think that emphasizes the holiness of God and the sinfulness of sin from last week. What did Moses carry? It's what Moses carried is number two. Two tablets. What was on the tablets? And if you said the Ten Commandments, well, yes, that's true, but it didn't take two tablets front and back to cover the Ten Commandments. God could write smaller than that. It was all of the information he'd given up to that point. It was the covenant, okay, as we understand it. He's carrying these tablets. They weren't for display in the courtroom, though I think it's great to display the Ten Commandments in the courtroom and in schools and all of that. Those are summary statements, but there was way more that God gave than just the Ten Commandments, okay? So understand that. God had given him all kinds of information, probably the design of the tabernacle, all that kind of stuff on these two tablets, front and back. They were duplexed, if you're into printing technology, okay? It says here, the two tablets of the testimony were in his hand. The tablets were written on both sides. One on one side and one on the other they were written. Now the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. Who wrote the tablets? All right. I would just see if you were reading what I was reading. Wouldn't you like to see those tablets? If we had them, people would be worshiping them, probably. But verse 17, it's number 3. Now when Joshua heard the noise, so remember Moses is up here by himself. He leaves Joshua halfway up somewhere. And remember, he left supposedly the elders at the bottom and wait here until I get back. Okay, that didn't happen, I guess. But so Moses is at the top. He's working his way down. Then he and Joshua are working their way down. And all of a sudden, this is what Joshua happens. What happens to Joshua? And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "There is a noise of war in the camp." Joshua fears, hears and fears. Hears and fears. What does he think is going on? We've been attacked. What can you tell me, only with this information, about what's going on? Only with this verse. I don't want you to talk ahead because you know the answer. Based upon what Joshua said, what can you tell me about what's going on at the bottom of the mountain? It's extremely loud. What's going on? Because he heard what? It was loud shouting, and loud, there were other things too, but we can't tell that from this verse. It says that there was a very loud noise. It sounded like war to him. What else goes on in war? I can't hear you.
Dying.
Okay, dying. And maybe they're screaming or whatever. What else besides voice noises? Metal clashing or something. Now, this is, I'm putting this in brackets because we're being creative here, right? Metal clashing. And I don't think that's necessarily outside of the bounds of what we're talking about here. But he was hearing shouting and other stuff to make him think that it was a war going on. So I would say clashing, thumping, whatever going on. Okay? It was voices and what sounded like combat. Fair? Is that fair? Yes. Just say it. All right?
When the war was over, the Second War, I'm told this, that people would take their pots and pans and go out and bang them together and make all types of horrific types of noises just to celebrate that. And sometimes in some towns it was very horrific. I mean, that's all you could hear. This would not be anything less than that.
I have no idea historically, because I'm stupid and I just don't know the answer. But gunpowder was created before this time. Anyone here like firecrackers?
Except during July.
I honestly don't mind firecrackers. My dog hates firecrackers, and I hate that my dog hates firecrackers when my neighbors light them off or something. By the way, I don't believe you should be lighting them off because they're illegal. And there's no moral cause for you to do so until it is legal, right? You're not. There's no righteous reason for you to light fireworks that are illegal. That's, to me, unless you're a libertarian that thinks that the government had no right to make such a law in the first place. And then we're pretty much lost, because that would take care of a lot of stuff. But listen, I'm fine if I want them to legalize fireworks, because I want to keep my neighbor up. And I want to get his dog fired up. Okay? Not really. It's not payback, but I want to enjoy them. If they can enjoy them illegally, I'm waiting for the day when I can. But I still think there's reason to not do it at night when people should be sleeping. Okay? There's courtesy, right? My freedoms end where your rights begin, right? And then I have the right to sleep at night or whatever. Anyway, I remember seeing on Facebook, it was like, great, this is the time of year when you don't know whether it's a gunshot fired or fireworks. right? I remember my son-in-law, who's a cop, posted that last year. It's like, great. And I listened to the scanner a lot, and they came down Douglas East. There's an apartment complex down at the end, and they thought it was shots fired. And what do you do when you're a cop all night long? And they don't know. And I mean, a lot of people can discern it, but there's times when you don't know if that was a gun or if that was a firework, right? Maybe there was something like that. Or maybe it was the thumping of drums that made it sound like, you know, there was things going on or whatever. But there was certainly that, right? There was enough for Joshua, who knew a little bit of war at this point, that what war was about, right? Notice what verse 4 says. But he, Moses, says, it is not the noise of a shout of victory, nor the noise of the cry of defeat. It's not the noise, it's not what you'd hear if someone was winning or losing. What is it? But the sound of what? Singing. I guess this. And it wasn't singing in the rain. Singing in the rain. Huh? I'm sorry, sees. No, he tells what he hears. I'm sorry. I got more sleep than normal last night, but that isn't still a lot of sleep. He tells what he hears. Okay, Joshua says, hey, I hear war. And Moses goes, no, it's not someone being beat or beating somebody else. They're singing. Now let me ask you this. What type of singing sounds like war? Well, and I'm not even talking about type of music. All I'm saying is it was not a singular choir number. You know, it's like, listen, you can hear, and he shall reign forever. That's not what he's hearing. He's hearing major party, you know, like that. It wasn't organized. It was, there's groups of people singing, you know, at the top of their lungs or whatever. It wasn't Aaron standing up going, okay, now for the fourth verse, right? It was like chaos music. That's why it would sound like war rather than an organized structure. Does that make sense? Choir music doesn't sound like a war. And Joshua heard it, and it's like, it sounds like a war. No, they were beating on stuff, and they were screaming and hollering, and they were shouting, if you call that music. But all of that was going on, right?
Yeah, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah. Okay, so look at number 5 now. So it was, as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf and the what? So he tells what he sees. He sees what he fears. So tell me more about the singing. What is singing? What's it take to sing? Okay. Opening your mouth. It takes music. That's what I was getting at. I'll just give you my answer because I might ask such a poor question, you might never get my answer. It takes music. I have 2. Now she'll throw it back.
It won't show up on the screen.
Okay. This one actually is pretty. Listen now. I'm just making, I think, some good assumptions here, okay? Assumptions. Loud, right? shouting. They're singing. So there's a form of what does singing involve? And I'm saying music of some kind. That's just an like a lame observation, but it's essential. When you sing, there's music. What else? It was the music you could what to?
Dance.
I changed my mind. I made it into a gerund. Dancing. What kind of music makes you dance? Different kinds. Singing in the rain. You know, like that. I call it a music of rebellion. It's what music?
Rave music.
I didn't.
Rave.
Rave, R-A-V. Sorry, I'm not that familiar with the. Yes, you are.
Not much.
I'm really mean today. I'm throwing. I'm defacing. Next, I'll be painting my face with. But anyway, can I add to this? This, and we're not necessarily addressing dancing. How many of you have ever been in a marching band? I have. And let's see if I can do this. I didn't play the drums, but their cadence was incredible. It's dun 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 dun. Okay? And guess what? You want to like, you want to step your feet, and that's what it is, because you're marching to the rhythm. You can't see, you can hear a whistle of the, what's that guy called? The majorette. Dun, 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 dun. And then we had certain cadences that would tell us it's time to, I played the trumpet, and, you know, and when to do it, and when to put it down. Dun, 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 dun. So there's music can make you have rhythms or whatever. I grew up in Fort Dodge, and there was a guy named Carl King that wrote a lot of marching band music. Dun, 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 and you want to stamp your feet, right? Kind of thing. That isn't this kind of music. I'm not talking about dance in general. We can have that argument and discussion later. Okay, but I'm talking about there's a type of dance that is built upon lust. Okay, did I offend you?
Yes, you did.
Okay, right here. It's built on lust. Okay, and I'm still having conversations with my kids and all that because honestly, years ago, and I'm talking before our time even, but years ago, when you did not have electronics, you did not have nearly the ability to do music like you do today. You know? So there's... And you did not have the blending of music. You didn't have much music at all. You sang at church, you sang at school, and you sang on the way to school or what. But that's about it. Unless you went to some show. You didn't turn on the radio. They didn't have a radio. You didn't throw in an 8-track. I'm older than you are. You didn't throw in an 8-track or a record or a, you know, reel to reel. That's all been almost all of it, except for the radio part, in my lifetime. So you didn't have the influence. But I'm talking to my kids more because... The general trend of Christians is music doesn't matter. It's generic. You know, there's intense music and there's light music and there's everything in between. But that's different than what the music is about. You know, you can have heavy metal screaming music about God. And believe it or not, they do. I used to be a music manager in a bookstore for a while years ago, and they had punk rock music that we sold. It was funny, though, because those are the ones that would get stolen. Worshipping God by punk music with the cassettes that I stole from the music store. There's some kind of inconsistency there. I'll let you figure that out. But I didn't know there were 16 different flavors of music at the time when I went to the bookstore there. But there's stuff that I believe music is emotional and can be fleshly. Okay? And you'll have people argue against that or whatever, but I'm saying you don't go into a bar, hopefully ever, but you don't go into a bar and hear the Handel's Messiah playing. Why? People aren't there to worship. They're there to get worldly. Okay, does that make sense? I can't fully explain it, and I'm still working on it. But they had some kind of music that was lustful, I believe. And by the way, this goes together. It isn't yippee yay music. It's dancing, carousing kind of music. And again, remember we said if you redefine God into your own image, it redefines how you worship God, and that all happened in 40 days. It doesn't take generations to cave. All you have to do is start with redefining what God says. Like say, oh, let's pick something out of a hat, like marriage. And all of a sudden, everything changes. Okay? Here, they've gone from a quiet, it seems, ongoings to what Joshua thought was a war. And when they show up, they're dancing. Apparently, rather wildly. It wasn't the waltz. Okay? So he sees what he fears. The rest of this, Pastor Jim can explain when we have more time. I don't fully understand all of this. I'm just being honest. Number 6, Moses reacts in anger. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. They must have shattered. Yeah, he knew that they had made the calf. Let's see here. God said it was and worshipped and sacrificed to it. He didn't know about the wild party going on. So I don't think it could have gotten a whole lot worse. It's just that their definition of God defined their worship of God.
God told them on the mountain.
Well, all I'm saying is God didn't tell him about the dancing and the music.
No, I mean,
he told him, and he said, they have made themselves a molded calf, worshipped it, and sacrificed to it. And this is ongoing worship, really, is what it is.
But what I'm saying is each step he took, and I'm just saying because of the distance, every step he took, the more intense.
Like, you know, your son does something wrong, and you build up? I'm just saying that theoretically. I'm not saying I know anybody.
Do you think maybe Moses was really angry because he had just offended the Israelites to God?
Well,
do you think maybe he felt like
And it could be, Elizabeth said, do you think he's angry? Because he basically said, don't destroy them. You know, he gets out like, on second thought, let me stand back. But we don't know all the details, but what did he do? He throws the tablets down and they shatter, apparently. You know, I always think if they're big tablets, they just crack in half or something. Well, no, it sounds like they just... Yeah, you know, it's ceramic instead of a hunk of granite that just splits in half or something.
You have to have quite a temper to shatter tablets made of stone.
But sharp on... brittle on brittle will shatter. It doesn't necessarily have... You don't even have to necessarily be real hard. Have you ever dropped a Corel dish and have it break? It's like an explosion. It literally explodes. So, I mean, it could be something like that. So, that isn't, to me, the most important thing. But he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. Some people say, and I'm just going to give you a couple theories and then I'm going to move on. But some people say that he did it, you know, they're explaining why it's okay to do this. And I'm not, God never reprimands him, never says, why did you do that? He did let him chisel his own rocks the next time before he goes up. Take your time on those, you know. But that he felt like they didn't deserve it, you know, God, well, that's probably a given anyway. So I don't really know, but and was it righteous anger? I'm not going to defend or either way. Okay, I don't know that they were his to break and all that. But anyway, he does react in anger and he busts the two tablets. Verse 20, then he took the calf which they had made. Now this is interesting. This is the space orange drink. What's it? Tang. The first evidence of Tang. Then he took the calf which they had made, burned it in the fire. Threw it in the fire or threw fire over top of one or the other. Ground it to powder. And he scattered it on the water and made the children of Israel drink it. Moses deals with the calf and the people. Why? Well, it got rid of that. There's probably maybe reasons why ingesting made sense. I don't know. You don't normally eat anything that's not organic. But maybe it's like, oh, if you want a peace offering, here's your stinking peace offering. Right? You eat it with the fellowship here. Fellowship with this God. Right? The peace offering, you ate it. Maybe it was like a peace offering or something. I don't know. Or maybe he was just mad and said, here, eat it. It's like your older brother sticking your face in the snow because you got a good shot on him with the snowball. I don't know. You know, I don't really know. Verse 21, number 8, Moses confronts Aaron. Remember he said the only thing worse than the people before 40 days were up were saying, where's Moses? We don't know what to do. We need a God. And the only thing worse is Aaron goes, okay. Right? Brother of Moses, all of that. So Moses says, what did this people do to you that you have brought so great a sin on them? That's what my question is. What does the president have over the Supreme Court justices or the people in Congress that make him do what they do? Right? Kind of the same question. It's like, why? What kind of torture did they do to you to make you do this? And his response was as noble as the response to the people. Okay? Aaron blames and lies. Aaron is not a good man. What does he say here? He appeals to the people, right? Do not let the anger of my Lord become hot, O younger brother than me. You know the people, that they are set on evil. It's them. It's the people. For they said to me, and I think it was such a blatant lie that Moses is like, it ain't even worth an answer. They said to me, make us gods that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. Now, is that true? Did they actually say that? Yes. Verse 23 is true. So verse 24. And I said to them, whoever has any gold, let them break it off, which he did. So far, so good. So they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. Moses doesn't even answer that. You know, I don't know. Am I putting words into the Bible when someone says that, and you're like,
really?
You're like, you just slouch your shoulders and look, and it's like, yeah, right, you know, older than me person. You know, he's 83 or 4, whatever Aaron is, and you're acting like a teenager! And I put you in charge, and you're supposed to be responsible! And now you're lying to me. You blame the people. You're in charge. Who's responsible? What could have answer have been to the people, by the way?
No.
No? Okay. That would have worked. That's a good word. Right? Number 10. Moses takes serious action. I don't know if you know this. You probably do. Now, when Moses saw that the people were unrestrained, this party has not ended when Moses showed up. There's a rebellion against authority going on. By the way, music can do that. I think music is one of the biggest secret enemies of the Christian and one of the greatest weapons of Satan, because it somehow lulls us or somehow massages our hearts so that all kinds of wicked can come in. But notice, he says, when Moses saw that the people were unrestrained, for Aaron had not restrained them, to their shame among their enemies. What are they doing? Some people say that they're actually having a horrible sexual thing going on. Okay? And some of the words could mean that. They rose up to play, the Bible says earlier. Then Moses stood at the entrance of the camp. They weren't stopping. And here's the Moses that they were worried about. We don't know what has become of him. Isn't it interesting that oftentimes someone expressing concern is actually an underhanded rebellion? Because we don't really care about Moses at all. We want a party! Right? We don't care what mom and dad say. We just want to do what we want to do. Okay? And it's actually, the bottom line is, it's just sinful rebellion against God and his authority. So what does Moses do? Verse 26, and Moses stood in the entrance of the camp. Nothing was slowing down. And he said, you've sung this song. Who is on the Lord's side? The New King James says it to whoever is on the Lord's side. Come to me. And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. Who is on the Lord's side is a song saying, separate yourself from the sinfulness that is going on. That's the context of the song. Verse 27, and he said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel. The bottom line is what God says, not what people say. By the way, they had majority rule there at the time. I don't know if you noticed. The masses were okay with the party, right? Let every man, what was his answer here, or his instruction? The Lord says, let every man put his sword on his side and go in and out from entrance to entrance throughout the camp, and let every man kill his brother, every man his companion, and every man his neighbor. Why? Because the sin wasn't stopping. That's how bad sin is. We're going to kill until the sin stops. Whatever was going on was more than a little flute chorus. And it was bad enough that we're going to kill until the sin stops. So the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses. And by the way, it was God's direction, not Moses ultimately. And how many people died? They had to kill 3,000 people before the party would die down. That's a party. Verse, or number 11, Moses affirms. Moses affirms the actions of the sons of Levi. Then Moses said, "Consecrate yourselves." He's talking to the sons of Levi. "Today to the Lord, that he may bestow on you a blessing this day, for every man has opposed his son and his brother." Can I tell you that at times it is right to oppose your family? It is right to oppose your friend if you are on God's side. And you see that in the New Testament too. Jesus says, "None of you who have left fathers, mothers, brothers, sisters, land will fail to be rewarded in this life and in the life to come," God said. We are so worried about our relationships with people that hate God that we fail to recognize our relationship with the God that needs to be first in our lives. Big deal here. Number 12. Moses tells the people the truth. Isn't that what we need to be told? Rather than wish-washy stuff. "Now it came to pass on the next day that Moses said to the people..." He hadn't even said anything more till the next day. Maybe they're busy burying people, huh? "You have committed a great sin. So now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin." It's not over. It's not over. You violated all of this about God. And he tells him the truth. Number 13. "Then Moses returned to the Lord and said, 'Oh, these people have committed a great sin.'" Underline great sin. What were they doing? They were simply having a party. Whatever that party entailed involved great sin. It involved false worship, which you have to get there to get to a great party. I'm sorry. Okay? What I'm talking about here, where you have to kill people to stop it, right? "They have made themselves a god of gold. Yet now you will, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, I pray, blot me out of your book which you have written." So Moses appeals to God, "Please forgive them." And he offers himself, I don't know if you'd say it as a substitute, but if you blot them out, blot me out too. What does God say? And now this is an interesting final, it's his response, God's response. "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of my book.'" We could do studies. Anyone know what the books that God has? Books of works, right? You see that in Revelation 20. And there's also, it's confusing, but there's the book of the living. Those are people that are alive. If you get blotted out of the book of the living, you're a dead man or woman. Okay? So those are the three books. They're the book of life, the books of works. The dead were judged by the things that were written in the books, plural, in Revelation 20. And the book of the living, you blot you out of the book of the living, that he'll kill you. Okay? That may be what he's talking about here. Now that he says, "Whoever has sinned against me, him I will blot out of my book." Because he's talking about physical death. So that's what I think it is, that third book. "Now therefore go, lead the people to the place to the place of which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit for punishment, I will visit upon them for their sin. It is not over. What did we say on Wednesday nights? And we've said last week, I think, that forgiveness is not the same. Being released from guilt is not the same as being released from consequences. There's forgiveness. Here, it doesn't even say that he's forgiven them for this. He said the punishment is yet to come. That's what he said. So the Lord, what does he do in verse 35? He plagued the people because of what they did with the calf which Aaron made. So there was an ongoing, there was death. There was condemnation that kind of held over them. And there was a plague, at least, that we know so far. A plague. Sin has consequences, right? God never says, oh, that's okay. Somebody has to pay for that sin. Well, I'm thankful that Jesus paid for our sins, but there's still that consequence thing. I'm just reading through the life of David and what a horrible consequence that came upon him for his many failures.
When was the last time you made something golden? Do you ever think possibly the reaction to their plague was because of that which they did?
Yeah. Some people say that. I don't think that's what it is.
Well, I just said that's yeah. A body and it's functioning.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it came out at this time and got this.
I have gold in my teeth, yeah. So I don't think it's toxic that way. So.
You're not eating it.
Yeah.
And you don't need enough of it to.
Well, but there was 2.6 million people to share. If they all drank it, was it just the leaders? We don't know. But that would have taken a long time for them to drink. If every one of them had to drink it. And maybe everyone did. I don't know. So anyway, but there's ongoing problems because of their sin. You sin, it does not remove the consequence. I'm just telling you. We talked about this on Wednesday night. And a lot of people think, well, oh, I just ask Jesus to forgive our sins. And what did we say too? We don't do that either, right? We confess our sins, and then he's faithful just to forgive us. We say the same thing about it. We're stepping back from our sin and doing right. That's what we're supposed to do, confessing it. So, anyway, not a good time for Israel, and yet God still works with them. By the way, he changes his relationship with them next week if we go there. He changes it. He quits being close to them. And that's another warning that we'll get to. Yes, ma'am. Time's up. I'm teasing. Okay. No, I'm done. No, good.
When you went through number 9, you know, with Aaron blaming Elijah, I was thinking, is that a reflection of that? You know, like Adam and Eve with the throwing the blame.
I thought of Adam, too. It's like, man, he's a man's man. He's a man's man. He's blaming the people and the fire, right? I thought of Adam too in that way, so.
Moses was a miraculous event. I put the gold in and came out. Hey, what would you do?
Yeah, how can you dismiss that? But if Moses is like, yeah, okay, it was so wonderful, I'll throw it in the fire, grind it up, and let you drink it. That's how what I think of your lie. Here, have a big glass there, Aaron. So, by the way, you did see, and I think it's later on, but Aaron and Miriam both rose against Moses, as did the sons of Korah, to rebel against his leadership. It's like, you're nobody special. It's like, yeah, you're right. I didn't pick me. God picked me. I'm a nobody, and I tried to talk God into that. And Miriam got leprosy. Remember that?
Not for a short period of time.
Yeah, it was a little while. He made her have it for a while anyway, so. Anyway, thank you for your persistence.